Good day, everyone, and welcome to episode 44 of This Week in Testing. Today, I have the privilege of co-hosting with AJ Wilson. Hello, AJ. Welcome. Good to see you participating and again and being part of This Week in Testing. Awesome to co-host with you. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Yeah, good, good. Getting stuck in. The usual, can't believe we've got to Friday. It's been another busy week in the community. Lots of good stuff going on. Just off the top of my head, and we get into the detail about a few things in a bit. But yeah, yesterday was a really good, the Testing Planet. It was all about tooling. It was called the Toolsmith. And we had some awesome people getting involved, sharing some really good things. Yeah, we had Kat telling a wonderful story about the decisions that you make when it comes to automation. And Kat told it in a wonderful storytelling way. So yeah, if folks missed it, they can catch the talk, which should be available on ministryoftesting.com in the coming weeks. But that one really stood out as a brilliant storytelling method. Yeah,
I'm glad I missed it, actually. I had interviews and stuff yesterday, so I couldn't attend, but I love the interactive part of it, so I'm quite looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, next one, can't think of the date off the top of my head, but we're running one next month. Do go check that out. If folks can kind of get a sense of all the events that we're running at Ministry of Testing, if they go to ministryoftesting.com/events. But before we go any further, I should say that this one is being recorded. So last week we experimented with recording and the audio turned out okay, actually. So what we're going to try and do is just put them into a simple podcast format. I think to start off with, we'll probably host them on the Ministry of Testing YouTube channel. So folks can come back to this stuff. We kind of feel there's a lot of good topics covered. People share some really helpful things and there's some real good conversation. So we want to give people access to that and they can come back to it a little bit later. So yeah, watch this space. We're thinking just start simple with YouTube and then perhaps we'll host that on ministryoftesting.com or try and syndicate it out to all the podcasting places. But we shall see. We'll start simple and go from there. So this one is recorded. The other thing to mention is our code of conduct. So important to be aware, if you do come up on stage, please be mindful of the code of conduct. You can find that on ministryoftesting.com. If you have a look in the footer, you will see a link to a word called conduct, and that takes you to our code of conduct page. Talking of footers, we've also updated our footer on ministryoftesting.com. So we've tidied it up. Hopefully things are a bit more accessible. And you can find all the incredible good stuff that the community are up to via the links in the footer. So yeah, it's a good excuse to go exploring, excuse me, and find lots of exciting stuff. So for those who are new, this is a way for us to gather every week. Myself and AJ, we're just going to have a little chit chat at the start about some of the things that we've been observing this week, share some thoughts and reflections, and then we will invite you, the audience, up onto stage where you can ask a question, pose it to the audience and whoever is up on stage at that time. You could share a reflection, something that you've been working on, or perhaps you like to come up on stage and celebrate something about the community. Perhaps you could celebrate maybe a community member that's been doing some awesome things and share some of the things that they've been up to. So yeah, let's use this as a way to catch up, debrief, see what's been happening in the community and start some good conversations. So AJ, yeah, where would you like to start? What sort of things have you been observing this week?
Just a quick one before I start my observations. I have noticed there's a lot of new listeners, which is fantastic, from all over the world. And there's some people from some of the women in tech and women in testing communities in the Netherlands, Spain, Portugal. If anyone wants captions, there is a beta version on LinkedIn that you can turn on in the three dots. If you're not in the UK or you're just traveling, public transport, again, can be kind of hard to hear us sometimes. So feel free to turn those on if you need them, if you don't have anything locally. I just know that someone listening last week was on the train and they found it quite hard sometimes. So I was showing them how to turn it on.
Oh, good shout, AJ. Thanks for the reminder. I think it, yeah, I guess I seem to remember it, must remember my setting because it comes on automatically, but that's me assuming that it remembers. But for folks who haven't got a switch on, yeah, great shout that you can turn on captions. Great idea.
Yeah. So I'm AJ. I'm speaking from the UK at the moment. I'm UK based. And one of the things I've noticed here and online in some other countries as well, one of the topics is developer to tester ratios. I don't know if that's something you've noticed as well, Simon.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And it keeps coming back. I know we've got a thread going on the club, which is Ministry of Testing's forum, where you can kind of get stuck in, ask questions to the community or share some of your knowledge and experience. But yeah, it kind of, the one, I think, I can't remember who asked it. Let me just find a link here. Yeah, we got a question from Justin Moss back in April. So nearly a year ago, April 2023, over a year ago, I should say. God, I'm losing track of time. And they asked, what are your dev QA ratios? Some folks replied at the time. But yeah, more people are jumping back on that thread and sharing their thoughts. So yeah, what did you make of it, AJ?
I found it really interesting because regardless of the ratio, the ways of working can be very different in every company. And the contribution factor. There's some companies out there that still work in waterfall. So they might have a whole separate team or an offshore team that do the testing. The company that I'm working for at the moment, for example, there's one QE per team. And another company that I'm supporting, a charity, they have one QE per team. Say it's like four developers, but they'll have a staff QE that sits over two teams to help with anything more technical or to help upskill the QE as well. So they have that career path. It just depends, I guess, where you're working.
Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me of a poll that we put out, I think it was about maybe 3 or so months ago, where we asked about, you know, what does your team setup look like? You know, are you a tester on a testing team that works with developers on development teams? Or are you like an embedded tester, like within, say, an agile squad or that kind of thing? Or like, are you in leadership or some other role? And I'm trying to find the poll, but I can't find it. I don't have it to hand. But I seem to remember it was pretty equally split from people who were saying, yep, I'm a tester in a dedicated testing team and we serve, you know, development teams and they consider themselves separate. And, you know, an equal split of people that said, oh, no, I'm completely embedded. We're just a sprint team and we crack on and I'm a specialist as a tester. And it's fascinating that, you know, that was, I think we had around about 600 responses to that survey. So pretty, I would say, statistically significant, but fascinating, you know, as a sample set of the community that it was pretty much 50-50. And yeah, what that means for ratios, I find really interesting as well.
Yeah, another observation just from the community in general and connections that I have and that I've seen, there's a lot of people who are in that transition stage where they're going from either associate to mid, senior to either senior two or staff or lead or test manager. Because obviously test manager in one company can be very different from a test manager in a different company. And I'd love to hear maybe from people that are listening what their experience of that path is. I know that for some companies it's diagonal, horizontal. There's lots of different options. So if anyone listening has recently transitioned, that would be really great. Hi, Jenna. I can see you. Hello. I can see you put your hand up.
Yeah, let's get Jenna up on stage. Wonderful. Great question as well, AJ. Jenna, welcome. Jenna, if you are speaking, it looks like you're muted from this side. So I'll just give it a little mo. See if you. Oh, there we go.
I didn't realize it did that. Okay.
Ah, no worries. No worries. All good. All good. I can hear you loud and clear. So welcome, Jenna. And yeah, lovely to see you again. It feels like just yesterday that we were catching up, right?
It does.
So for those who weren't able to join the Testing Planet, Jenna, they were our wonderful host during the Testing Planet episode 3. So it's great to see you again, Jenna. But yeah, please do jump on in. Go for it.
So all I want to say, because and these conversations keep happening, which makes me really happy. Regardless of what seniority level someone is, whether it's associate or senior, or even at the management level, although we should be clear about being a manager is a sidestep into a different role. You're no longer really a tester. You're now a manager. It's a different job. Regardless of what your role, your seniority level is, we still have this problem, and this is what my academic research is on, that we don't validate the identity of people as testers in those roles. And so I feel like we're seeing people move up in seniority level, but also become more disillusioned in their role because their identity as a tester, who they feel they are, what they feel makes them them about being a tester, is no longer represented in the role. And I'm curious, as an anecdotal thing for my own personal reasons, if anybody has experienced that like they moved up and then they were like, I don't feel like I'm doing the job that I've always believed I do anymore.
I've actually had that myself. I was promoted into a test lead role. This is more than 10 years ago. And it was actually frowned upon if I did any testing. It seemed to become a political role. I went to a lot of meetings, a lot of reports, and I kind of stepped really far away from testing itself, which hindered my, in my opinion, ability to help the performance and development of the people that I managed, because I wasn't connected. I didn't have the experience and I wasn't going through the hardships that they were going through in some pieces of work. And so I really struggled with that specific company because they just viewed it as me stepping into almost like a test suit role. So I just wore a suit and I was there to represent what they thought testing was, because it wasn't a role that came up with by an actual someone with a testing experience. It was someone in HR that felt a box had to be ticked. I ended up leaving because it was just the wrong thing. But
yeah,
I think there's a lot of that where there's been that historical role, like in monolithic companies like IBM, that type of thing, Accenture, really old companies, banking, for example, and they get really disconnected.
Mm-hmm. And you feel like the more disconnected you are from the work, the less like a tester you are anymore.
I think no matter what I do, I'll always be a tester, not mm-hmm. just testing patients, but because I'm interested in it. I love the community. But I feel in my current job, for example, now I'm staff level. I have a lot of leadership and management responsibilities. I do a lot of coaching, personal development, one-to-ones, but the majority of my job is still testing. Mm-hmm. And it's taken me a long time to find this kind of role that fits and ticks all of my boxes. And I know those roles aren't in multitudes. There's not many of them across the world. It takes a while to find them. They're kind of a new hybrid that's forming where you can actually do everything. But then if you are line managing on top of that, it will impact and it will negatively impact the people that you're managing because you can't have time for everything.
Right. Yeah.
I wonder if that's why some folks end up turning to a community. And of course, you know, we're talking about Ministry of Testing here, or at least that is the example I would go to by default. And I do wonder if some folks who are feeling disillusioned at work, given that they've gone into more of a senior role and they are less kind of in the nitty gritty or the front line, so to speak, that they're like, oh, I need to find my connection. I need to, you know, I'm not able to get that even with my colleagues, perhaps. I don't know. I don't think we've ever asked that question or jumped into that as a topic, but I think it would be a curious one to find out about whether people turn to community for that reason. Because, you know, anecdotally, I think I turned to community because it was like, oh yeah, I need to think outside of the company I'm working at, and I, you know, that's going to be beneficial. I don't think it was at that stage. I was disillusioned, and I was in a leadership role at that time, if I remember. It's a while ago now, but yeah, be curious for us to find that out. Actually,
yeah, we do have some test managers listening. Some that have been in the role for a while, and some newer ones. Some people who've done it historically. I wonder if anyone else would like to jump up and talk about it.
Appreciate it. Does take a bit of bravery to jump on up on stage, and very grateful for those who do. But let's get Ben Doan up on stage. Ben, welcome. Ben, thank you for joining us. Feel free to jump on in.
Thank you very much. Yeah, this is a really interesting one, and I guess there are two sides to it. One is about the stepping into a higher or a management role, and the other is about how we use community. And I can speak to both, but maybe not directly related. So my temporary journey into dipping into test management was, for those of you who don't know, was very much a case of, by the way, I once went to an all hands in a previous company I was in. It was a small consultancy startup of some 50, 55 people. And I went to an all hands, and simply there was a presentation about the new structure, and some teams and stuff had been moved around a little bit, and my name on the new org chart, my title had been changed to quality manager, and I didn't know before I went to this all hands that that was had been changed. So that was very much a case of, oh, thanks, what on earth does that mean? So that was a very weird flirtation with management. It was great experience, because I did then go on to get some line manager training and line manager a few testers, but quite the opposite to you, AJ. I didn't really get to get rid of any of my day-to-day testing ability to do it. So I really do feel that in retrospect, I wish I had more capacity and energy and just time to dedicate to better supporting the testers who I was managing, not least because effectively they were on one side of the very small company and I was on the other. So they were all working on telemetrics, and I was working on the everything else side of the company. So we weren't even testing or working on the same stuff, which I really don't like that of my own managers now. So I imagine that can't have been the easiest thing for them, me not having their context and them having to tell me everything. So, that was a challenge.
That's a good point as well that you made there about feeding into your line manager and working with them directly. Because I don't know if you've seen this as well, Jenna. There's a lot of, well, in the UK, for example, a lot of testers actually report into their engineering managers for line management. And what I found when I first joined my current company many years ago was that the EM at the time didn't really understand anything about testing or how to help me develop or how to do my one-to-ones. Like, what do we talk about? How can they help me improve? And I feel that this might be a common theme now, where some companies are now moving away from waterfall back to up to agile. And they're trying to form these new tribes and things that came out in 2012. And I wonder if that's something that you've noticed as well, Jenna.
So I feel like in the US, that's not what we're seeing. And I could be wrong, but what I've seen is primarily there's like a matrix structure, unless it's a small company, like little tiny companies, they may not do this, but at least at the enterprise level, we see usually a matrix where there's a test manager and the testers report to that test manager, and then they're embedded onto an agile team. And there's also some companies that still have totally separate test teams without embedded testers. And then there's the new the new culture of it, which is that depending on what you do, whether you're an automation engineer or a manual tester, if you're a manual tester, you're more like a test consultant, where you're almost like a mercenary to teams. You go and you help them identify the right way to test and to solve problems. And then they have an embedded automation engineer. So there's a couple of different ways it's being handled, but I'm not seeing a lot of testers in the US reporting to engineering managers. Usually there's some sort of test leadership structure.
Oh, that's interesting, because I'm seeing it quite a lot in the UK, especially around London, where there's been a lot more tech startups, and in some places in Manchester. Mm-hmm. So that's really intriguing, actually. That would be a great white paper to understand the differences and why, especially when there's so much commonality between the software between Western countries. Why?
Oh, goodness.
Oh, AJ, I think we might have lost your audio there, if you can still hear us. A bit of an interruption on the audio. Jenna, I can hear you, which is cool. So my assumption is that other people are able to speak and the audio is working. Jenna, would you mind just saying something just so I can test that assumption? Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yes, I can hear you loud and clear.
I had a weird blip for a second where everything cut out. I think LinkedIn got something weird going on.
Yeah.
I am curious what Ben is seeing in terms of like management leadership structure, because he's also in the US. So I'm wondering if you have the same perspective on it.
So interestingly, for context, I'm actually also in the UK.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's fine. And as such, I'm seeing very similar to AJ, where I don't have as much insight as AJ into multiple companies and with the recruitment space, but from myself and the community of testers I know, I've definitely seen this progression that AJ described, where it's now been a very long time that I have been managed by a test manager or had a test manager. In fact, I've actually only ever had that once in my career. So in 11, nearly 12 years, I've only ever had one test manager. And all the rest of the time, I have been either in some kind of funny structure where I was reporting to a principal quality engineer or like SDET, but they weren't in my team, and that I would not recommend that. That was terrible. Or maybe it was just that one manager. It's always hard to distinguish between the system and the person, right? I didn't have many samples. But I definitely have mostly been managed by someone who's leading the team that I'm in now, who happens to be an engineering manager rather than a tester. And I would say that has a major advantage for them understanding the work that I'm doing on a day-to-day level and the contribution I'm making to the team, but a major disadvantage in terms of understanding the craft and helping me develop and progress my career. So I use the community a lot, and that includes my internal community of peers, of all the people I work with who are maybe more experienced quality engineers, as well as the wider testing community. I lean on them for my career development instead of my engineering manager, who I'm just grateful is very supportive of me to develop myself. And that's how I managed to get to such cool things like turning up for lots of MOT events and going to Test Bash, because supporting me to do those things are the ways that he can support me to grow in my role. So there's a very direct, yes, my manager helps pay for me to go and do things in the community because he sees that as something that helps me develop, even so he's not a tester. So that's a very direct link, but not directly to me as a manager. I think we've got at least one person with their hand up. Perhaps, Simon, there's room for one more on stage?
Absolutely. There's always room for one more on stage. And Natalia, thank you so much for waiting patiently. Would love to get your take on this topic. So let's bring Natalia up on stage.
Simon, can I ask for a real quick favor?
Oh, yeah. Go for it, Jenna.
So I actually have to run to meet with my advisor for the university about the research that I'm doing, specifically about testers. So can I pitch to everybody to think about something and message me if you have any thoughts about it? One of the questions I asked on the survey that I did last phase of research was, being a tester is part of what makes me me. And that's about the idea of identity and professional identity. Since y'all are involved in the MOT community, if you happen to have any thoughts around whether being involved in a community related to testing helps to validate your identity, or maybe it doesn't have anything to do with that identity, not your whole identity, just identity as a tester, and you happen to have any thoughts about that, please, please, please send me a DM, because I'm gathering everything together for fall semester to finalize that and send it off to the IRB group that says yes or no on my research.
That's amazing, Jenna. Absolutely. Folks, just reiterate, please get in touch with Jenna. Being a tester is part of what makes me me, and thoughts on whether the community has an impact on that as your identity as a tester. And Jenna, yeah, we'd love to hear the outcome of how you move forward with that. We'd love to hear, you know, read the outcomes. It will be utterly fascinating. So yeah, thank you for joining. But yeah, enjoy the rest of your day, Jenna, and thanks for stopping by.
Have a great day and great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.
Cheers, bye. Natalia, it's great to have you up on stage. Please feel free to jump on in.
Hi, Simon. Thank you for having me. Thanks, Ben and AJ. I have something to add to engineering manager's role reporting. It's because I report to engineering managers for a few years now. I've got like different managers depending on the team where you go into. And I think it's one of the challenge, the moment that you move to the team, you'll get the new manager, because it's kind of within the team, the reporting role line within the team. I think echoing on Ben's thoughts, there are like pros and cons. Pros is like they're always like most, cons is more senior people like lead engineer manager or senior engineer managers, who can advise you on variety of like soft skills or like how to improve yourself in, let's say, facilitating some meetings or conveying your message, more soft skills and kind of experience. And also they will look with you on your career progression and like personal development. On the pro side is obviously there won't be many topics discussed in testing fields, because that's the nitty-gritty things that's usually not a part of experience. Although I'm very happy that we have it now, engineering managers joining with very solid quality and QA and tester background. So, and I think they've been quite known in the community. So it kind of like brings me a bit of like hope that the community of engineering manager will be more diverse, right? In terms of like thinking, approaching work, approaching like quality as well, like even talking about quality. And that's why I think, because I was missing this part with my one-on-ones or like a general more topics about testing and what do we do in this new, let's say, architecture. So I turned into a Ministry of Testing, and I find as well those discussions, all those questions when I search in the club. So I find them there and bring them back and say like, oh, what about like this? Maybe we can do something like that. So it's me about like going and finding more kind of relationship I can discuss informally without management line and bring it back. But it's an interesting, challenge. It also depends very much what type of engineer manager is. So also as a person and as a coach, So it's all depends, but yeah, it's different, and you have to be more independent and understanding how you want to drive conversation with your engineering manager as a manager. Yeah.
That's fascinating insight, Natalia. Thank you so much for sharing. I really feel like you've kind of written an article there for Ministry of Testing, the way you shared that, just thinking out loud. I'm like, that would make for a really helpful article. Like how to, you know, what kind of like, what do I do when my manager isn't someone who's a tester? Like the advice you shared and your experiences were so useful and helpful. My assumption is it would help a lot of others out there as well who are facing similar, you know, different contexts, but similar scenario. I think that'd be very useful.
I'm making a note, Simon, for my next article, obviously.
Wonderful. There you go. I mean, yeah, very much enjoy what you have to share. And yeah, if folks do want to hear more from Natalia, Natalia was part of a previous The Testing Planet. So you can find them now on ministryoftesting.com. We had some fun exploring some polls, looking at some things that have been happening in the community. So do go check that out. Natalia always has lots of really great things to share with the community, that's for sure. AJ, it's good to have you back. I think you had a few little technical difficulties. So I think you're back if you wanted to do a mic check.
I hope I'm back. I don't think it's working though. Oh, it's working. Yes, I can see the little green line, the little halo of joy.
That's it. I can hear you loud and clear. Welcome back, AJ. Sorry that you missed a little bit of that.
Yeah, I did, Natalia. I'm really gutted because it sounded really good. So hopefully when you write everything up on a blog post, I'll be able to read it.
Nice. All the more reason to do that, right? That's cool. Also makes me think maybe we, as Ministry of Testing, we should put out another poll. So we're putting out all sorts of polls. They help us have conversations during the Testing Planet. We also have a new Testing Trends feature available to all our professional and unlimited members. So they get access to our Testing Trends analysis. So maybe the question, and maybe we can frame it a bit better after this call, but I think it's like the question is around, who do you report to? Like, is it, you know, a lead, someone who leads the team who isn't a tester, in brackets, engineering manager is an example, a test manager who is a tester, and maybe some other options. But yeah, I think if we put that out, and maybe we were able to get about 600 responses, which is sort of typical for the polls at the moment, I think that would reveal something very interesting.
Yeah, that could be really good, especially in the Ministry of Testing Slack channels, because you can add in Poly, you can add in other options. So if there's not something that's been thought of, we can say, I report to the General of Testing or whatever the testing role is.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. And I'd be curious to know if folks report to someone that perhaps is unexpected, like, oh yeah, I report to the CEO, or I report to the head of marketing. It's like, oh, okay, you know, not I would say not so typical, but I'm sure that exists, right? Let's
I report, my line manager is an engineering manager, but I actually report in terms of working to the CTO.
Ah, cool. Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah, so it's very different to what I've seen in other companies. And previously I reported to the director of engineering. So again, that's different. And then at ASOS, I've reported to a principal engineer. I think you know him, Gareth Morehouse. He does a lot of posting and community work on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Yeah, funnily enough, I was making a note of Gareth's latest post. I'm going to include it in next week's newsletter. Really good post that they did a hackathon ASOS, just exploring how they could use generative AI to put together requirements, like at least make a start, reduce that time of having to think from scratch. It's really cool, actually, the results and how they used it. So yeah, going to include that in next week's newsletter, which I guess I should plug at this stage. It's a nice segue. If you're unfamiliar with it, I do encourage folks to sign up to the Ministry of Testing newsletter. We aim to put out a weekly newsletter, which we email out every Monday. We put it out on the Ministry of Testing website and also on LinkedIn as well. So if you follow the Ministry of Testing LinkedIn page. You can find a link to the newsletter and subscribe there. It's a great way for us to celebrate the community. There's so much good stuff going on, and you know, trying to summarize it all in an hour, or at least have a conversation about it during this call, we just don't have enough time. So yeah, we try our best to put that all into a newsletter and put that out to the community. So you can subscribe at ministrytesting.com/newsletter. Okie dokes. Wow, we have got just over 20 minutes to go. I can't believe how much the time is flying. AJ, where do you think we should go next?
Just a quick check-in for all the new people listening. A lot of people have joined in the last 10 minutes. That if you do hear anything that you're interested in we're talking about, or you have a question you'd like to ask the community, then you can pop your hand up and we can bring you up to talk.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a good, you know, good opportunity to celebrate someone in the community. If you want to do a shout out to maybe something that the community has been doing, a particular member that's kind of written something that you found interesting, or you've seen them helping someone out, then yeah, go for it. Let's start celebrating.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if anyone did anything where they work, but recently on the 16th of May, when it was a Thursday, I think it was the 13th Global Accessibility Awareness Day. It's the first year that I've not actively done something myself. I normally do something every year, and specifically for like the different charity groups. So I wondered if anyone in other countries, for example, I know we've got people from Poland, there's someone from Brazil, we've got India, we've got Pakistan, Munich, there's lots of people everywhere. So if there's anything you can think of that you want to come up. Also, we are conscious that some people listen on mobile, and it does take some time, especially if you're in transport, to unlock your screen, find the button to raise your hand. So please don't worry, we will get to you eventually. I can see we've got Lee and Mahati. So if I say your name wrong, I do apologize. Hi.
Yeah, let's get Lee up on stage. And Mahati, we'll bring you up in a little bit. But let's hear from Lee first of all. Lee, welcome.
Oh, Holly, thanks for having me. It wasn't about what you just asked, AJ, but I was thinking, for me, it was more around when you were talking about like the testing planet was on yesterday and so forth. I had a Facebook memory come up where it was 7 years ago that I first spoke at my local meetup. And I was just thinking there was bound to be people who are wanting to speak publicly, whether it's at meetups, conferences, on like technology such as this video. Like there's so many ways for people to get out there, but if they're not sure how to start, or they're like they've got a bit of an idea and so forth. And I know the people here have spoken at conferences and done webinars and so forth themselves, so I was wondering if folks here had some suggestions or ideas for people who are wanting to start but not sure where, or have nerves because we all do. Yeah.
So I don't know if it helps, but sometimes just organizing or joining a meetup is really useful. So there's different community groups for software development, which lovely include testers. And one of the women in tech ones I went to called Women's Tech Focus, WTF, great acronym. And what they did is everyone got to do a 3-minute talk, and it could be about anything. Literally anything at all. It could be nothing to do with software testing. And then they also did a game for the last 30 minutes where if one person talked about a theme, then the next person would talk about it. And so they gamified it. It made it completely fun. And there was even a talk where everyone had to talk for a minute on how they would test a plant. So it was just a great like fireside chat and those things, because it makes it a lot more relaxed. It can give people the confidence to talk. So yeah, and then events like this are really good where you can do voice, because some people don't like being in person, and it's a stepping stone into giving you that confidence.
That is very cool, AJ. If you don't mind me adding a few things as well. So I've got a few bits of advice about if you want to do something like to build on that, that's maybe a recorded session, whether that's an event, like however the event is. And that is, whether you need a formal abstract or not in order to actually get the gig, go through the effort of planning a bit the thing that you want to do. Go through the effort of writing up the pitch document, the elevator pitch, even if it's not a full abstract, even if it's not to a particular format, and try and find people you know who have done talks already to review it for you and give you feedback. So getting feedback on your idea and doing the planning will really help give you an idea if the topic is the kind of thing that other people will want to receive. Like if you've got the pitch at a place where it makes sense, or if you're going off on a tangent that is, you know, needs adjusting, like if you need course correcting. And it'll give you that motivation, because once you have some people you're engaging with who are like, oh, this is a really cool idea, I want to hear you do this talk, that kind of motivation can be really supportive. So they can both give you advice and maybe feedback on the idea of how you might do that, but also they can maybe help, you know, give you some motivation to get to that next step. And definitely if you do get as far as like applying somewhere, whether it's a meetup or whether it's for a conference, 100% give yourself plenty of time to do that abstract and get it reviewed and update it a number of times before you submit. Don't leave it till the last minute, because it's genuinely a fair amount of effort getting that prepared. So that's one thing. The other thing is, as you kind of already mentioned, that there are other ways to do speaking. One of them I would really encourage is try and find places at your place of work to do speaking internally, if you're brave enough to do that, whether that's with your team or with your like other people who are doing a similar role to you. And that can be a really useful way, because it's a different audience. It doesn't necessarily have to be like putting yourself out there in public. And depending on who you are and how you think about the world, it's either more or less scary to talk internally to your peers at work. So if that worries you, do it the other way around. Go talk to someone at a meetup that's in the community. Go do something that's outside of work. If that, you know, start wherever your anxiety is lowest and your energy is highest, and then build from there.
Yeah, I think those are great points. I think the other thing to add is, because the context will be different for everyone, right? But if you can know your audience, and the same as if you're doing a conference call or facilitating a workshop, I think understanding who the audience is really important, because it will help you guide the context and maybe the tone. And if you're using the slides, for example, if it's the right format. I don't know if it also helps. There's like Ministry of Testing Community, I've been part of some events, for example, that's been using tools where there's a lot of interaction and you can go into rooms. So making sure that you kind of force yourself to talk in those environments, not just sit there. that really helped me when I was younger. And I've loved them recently with Ministry of Testing. I've used them for some of our developers to help them get into the pattern, because they feel it's a safer space to talk. Those can be quite useful.
100%.
There's something that you... Oh, sorry.
I was just going to agree, and I was going to recommend people look up... there's a concept called liberating structures, and there's a website. So if you search for liberating structures, these are ways to have conversations between different groups of people in different formats in order to really encourage people to engage, and they're very powerful. So for example, there's the, I think it's 4-2-1 all or something, or 1-2-4 all, and the idea is you start by having time to reflect on the idea of yourself, and then you pair up with someone else, and then you go into a larger group of four, and then you feedback to the whole group. But that's not the only one. There are other liberating structures. So just putting a name to exactly the thing that you're saying, AJ, it's really useful to use these constructs and then find tools that help you do that.
Yeah. So there used to be a really good tool on the old Slack for Ministry of Testing for coffee meetups. And it's like having a water cooler moment, but you can talk to someone you've never spoken to before, and that could be a good first step. What kind of thing were you thinking of, Lee? That's what I was going to ask. When you said about doing more public speaking, what type of thing did you have in mind?
For me, it was, and just thinking like having people can like they might think, oh, the only way I can do public speaking is trying to get into a big event such as Test Bash, but might not be aware there are alternatives, or they might not consider like local meetups, that kind of thing. Because I know, like for my local meetup, if someone wants to say, hey, I've got a talk I want to do, they will like happily have you be involved and do everything they can to support. So it's a mix of just general awareness for people and something to consider, because especially when it's like conferences releasing their speaker list or when the call for papers come out, there can be a lot of hype and activity around it, and then it can fall off the radar for people. But like as you both said, like preparing things you want to do well in advance gives you time to reach out to friends, to peers, to try like working on it, to test your own talk, because we're testers, we know the benefits of iterative refinement. So yeah, it was mainly just that.
I find LinkedIn is quite good. I get a lot of requests on there to contribute for different things. That's quite good, but I don't put on my profile anymore that I'm willing to do public speaking, because I just get inundated with the most random stuff. But sometimes it's a good stepping stone.
Were you also being asked to do lots of fancy talks for free because you're a woman?
No, I was demanding payment and getting it.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't mind doing things for free for peers or the community or for charity groups. What I don't like doing is, for example, offering my time for mentoring for a non-profit that is actually a profitable group. If they're charging companies for your mentoring time and they're making money and you're volunteering your time, I don't agree with that type of thing, because that's just a pyramid scheme. But where it's like a genuine thing, like UN Women, or I do a lot of groups in London, getting women into tech, getting femmes and thems into tech, that type of stuff, I'll happily do that for free.
So this is a very cool conversation. Simon, we've got a couple of people to hand up. Do we have time for any more?
We absolutely do. Just waiting for the right moment to jump on in. Oh, there's so much good advice. So much good advice. I'll do a reminder about the new continuous call for contributions, but I'll save that until the end, because Mahati and Lena have been waiting so patiently. I think, Mahati, let's get you up. In fact, let's get Mahati and Lena. I believe Mahati had their hand up first, so I'll bring both of you up. Mahati, if you want to jump on in, that would be wonderful. Hey, Mahati, welcome to the stage. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, hello, everyone. Good evening.
Hello, hello. Good afternoon.
So it's evening for us, sorry.
Oh yeah, well, good evening to you. Good day, good afternoon, good morning.
Good afternoon,
to the planet. Wonderful, yes, to have you here, Mahati. Yeah, feel free to jump on in. Go for it.
Yeah, so I wanted to speak basically when AJ was talking about accessibility and then the discussion moved towards public speaking. Both of them are interesting topics for me. I could relate to accessibility much because I am a tester basically, and I wanted to discontinue my profession because I was of the thought that whatever I have to do has to connect to people. And exactly when I was about to quit, I saw a presentation on accessibility testing by in a conference, and that made me think that there is a human aspect to testing as well. And so I began volunteering as a scribe for blind people. So every year there's a foundation called Devanagari Foundation in India, which works for blind people. So I write exams for blind people free of cost. So that was the first thing. And second thing is autism is a cause that I can relate to, because I see many people in my society, children, small children facing autism. So I work with Autistic Society of India, and through accessibility I can connect to this cause, and I feel I can bring about a meaning to my profession. So this was my take. And also in 2021, Microsoft awarded me as the Global Accessibility Champion for that year. So that's a good cause. So wow. This was about,
that's amazing. Yeah. Just quickly to go back, because I think that success is phenomenal. You were awarded Global Accessibility?
Yeah, their GAD Day, they had a GAD Day event, so Global Accessibility Day. Mm-hmm. And during that event, they asked us to play certain games and give a few talks. So based on what we presented, they had awarded me a GAD champion for 2021. So I regularly attend every event related to accessibility, and for people who really want to do something with accessibility, DQ is a company that works with accessibility purely. So whatever I have learned in accessibility, I give credit to them.
Yeah, they're so a great company. Congratulations. Yes. On that award. Well done.
That's amazing, Mahati. I mean, honestly, you do so much for the community. I was thinking last week, or perhaps it was the week before, I think it was last week, I put a link in for a really good leadership model that you've developed and published. And I was thinking, like, Mahati's doing like loads of stuff for the community, just going for it. And you've just shared that as well. It's impressive stuff. So yeah, thank you for giving so much to the world of testing, quality engineering and QA, and with that focus on accessibility is wonderful. So yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah. So as for public speaking, I can relate what all suggestions you have been giving, but I wanted to share my personal experience with public speaking, because speaking is one thing that I've always liked. After school, probably I've never spoken anywhere in offices. So in 2020, like in the COVID pandemic period, I discovered my love again, and I jumped into that space without any kind of a guidance. So I was very lucky to get opportunities in India and as well as one or two times abroad. So I've spoken in Test Bash also once in the offline format. So I've seen a set of failures also. After that, I fine-tuned my goals. Like for example, this year I'll go through a retrospective on what areas I'm lacking, what areas I'm doing good in this space, and I will choose a particular area that I have to work. So one of the areas that I lack during public speaking is the sync between the camera and the content that I have to present. So for this, I have taken two challenges. One is every day I record a 1 minute video of myself for 90 days. I have been doing this since January so that I lose that problem. And the second thing is often we get sad when we are rejected at conferences. I also faced this year as well, but I decided that I will speak in every local testing meetup. And I take my friend along, so he records the sessions for me. And because of this, what happens is I can rewatch my session and send it to a mentor or people who can give me feedback as to what can be improved. So this has been helping me a lot. So on the disappointment front, I have disappointments, but when I saw the Test Bash continuous call for contributions, I was like, yay, this is a good way to do. Because what happened is I have submitted some papers for Test Bash, and when I see the feedback, sometimes I don't understand the feedback. Sometimes I'm disappointed as to why am I not making it. So I faced multiple experiences like this. So this was one. And last year, I have been mentored by MASH. This is called the Mentoring and Speaking Hub, with a lot of good folks who speak in Agile Testing Days. So because of that, I gained a lot of understanding on how conference submissions work and how do things really work in the background. So at least knowing things, I'm not in that darkness or gloom that, I'm just not getting a chance, or in that sadness that I'm at least optimistic now that this year I'll take it slowly and do it in a structured manner.
If it ever helps, Maddie, I spent 2 years, literally just that's all I did, looking at conference papers and submissions for speakers for a charity group called AnitaB.org. And that's for the Grace Hopper celebration they have in America every year. It's the largest women in tech conference there. So if you ever want a peer review, just ping me.
Sure.
Thank you so much for sharing all that, Mahati. That's just very good to hear from you. And folks, if you want to hear more, I mean, there are so many good examples of all the excellent stuff you're doing with the community. We had a really good chat a couple of weeks ago, did a recording for a news piece for the Testing Planet. So Mahati was part of that. I think it's available now. If you head over to ministryoftesting.com, do a search for the Testing Planet News episode 3 and you should find it there. But we had a good discussion. We were looking at some polls related to testing tools, sharing our thoughts and opinions on that. This is a lot of fun. Folks, I'm conscious of time, and I'm also conscious that Lena Kulikova has been waiting very patiently. And Lena, I really want to pass over the mic. Please don't feel rushed, and thank you to our listeners. If you do want to stick around, we're going to break the rules. We're going to go over the hour, because what the heck, why not? And we should do that. So Lena, yeah, feel free to jump on in. Thank you.
Hello to everyone. And thank you for the opportunity. First of all, thanks for this Friday sessions, and a huge congratulations to Mahati for all her hard work. This was so inspiring that I felt that I probably don't have that much to add. I just, considering the timing, would like to quickly talk about my experience about public speaking, because I was struggling. It was something that I really wanted to do at some point in life, start the conference talks and public speaking, but I was so afraid that the first meetup where I would be the speaker and also organizer of that meetup, I almost went back home. I was opening the office doors to that company, and I was almost going back home and trying to invent an excuse that I was sick or something like that. So it took a lot of courage back then to do that talk and presentation. So what I wanted to share is a little bit on different aspects. So yes, I do agree, we can use the meetups to practice. I love the tips that Mahati also shared. What I wanted to talk with more psychological aspects. So whenever we know that we need to deliver a talk and we feel that it's a dreadful experience, even though we want it and we like it, but it's always dreadful, it still is after all these years. So what I usually do is I try to think who is my target audience and what can be valuable for them. But I also try to analyze what's unique about me, because I don't want just to deliver a regular lesson. I want to deliver something that is from my experience. And one thing that helped me begin with is sharing actually my experience, because it cannot be wrong. If you are scared of being judged, you cannot be judged based on your experience. It's your experience. It's not right or wrong. It's just what happened to you and your lessons learned. So this helped me to start and practice this thing, just regardless of anything, this happened. So I'm sharing with folks what happened. And trying to also highlight what was unique about the struggles that I had and the wins that I saw. And also, I think that it's very important for us to look back and think about the struggles and questions that we had when we were starting in a new project or even in our career, because sometimes we get so used to our context that we feel that we don't have any good topic to share with others because everything is obvious. But it's only obvious to us in our specific context. And even someone very senior or experienced might look at your talk and see something new and learn something new. So think always about those things, like what kind of struggles, questions you had, and what you can share about your unique experience that only you have. Thank you.
I think those are great points, Lena. I think one thing that I've noticed probably in the last 20 years with public speakers and even speakers on webinars is there's a very distinct difference between people who understand the art of storytelling and showing their own personal parts into that story. And then you see people who talk about testing tools, for example, and it feels like they're reading a script like a robot, and they're just trying to get as much information into that session as possible. And it's really disengaging. So the art of storytelling is really important, and having that part of yourself in that story is equally, it gives the empathy to what's happening and what you're talking about. I think those are great points.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for sharing today, Lina. And thanks everyone for getting in the mixer today. We have come to the end of the hour. We've broken that boundary. It's all good. Thank you folks for sticking around. It's been wonderful to co-host with you today. AJ, always a privilege, always enjoy our co-hosting together. And thanks so much for everyone who's popped up on stage, and to our listeners as well for sticking around. We do hope you find these conversations helpful. And yeah, please do get involved. And you know, one of the ways, as we've been talking about, how to contribute to the community or get stuck in with public speaking, do have a look at ministryoftesting.com/news. You'll see a really good post from Rosie Sherry, who is the founder and CEO here at Ministry of Testing. And she describes why we have now introduced a continuous call for contributions. You know, think of it as a way of kind of, you know, getting stuck into the community in a way that works for you, and also to not feel overwhelmed, to find your way to share your voice. And, you know, we literally say no experience required. New and diverse voices are very welcome. And I really want to hammer home that point. It is essential as a community for us to have diversity. It is essential for us to continue to support people who are getting into the space of sharing with others. We have to support and lift up those good folks. They've got many good things to share. And it's important that we do that. That's kind of, for me, is an axiom. And it comes with, fortunately, with this wonderful community that is made up of brilliant people at Ministry of Testing, an incredible bunch of folks who get involved and contribute in many, many ways. So let's continue to support each other. And you can do so via the continuous call for contributions. So do go check that out. Other ways to connect. We're always hosting all sorts of events. So do head over to ministryoftesting.com/events. Lots of meetups going on at the moment, which is very cool. So these are local in-person meetups all across the globe. And if you're also curious about setting up your own meetup for your local community, then do get in touch and we can look at ways to support you to make that happen. Great. AJ, any final thoughts before we close off this session?
Yeah, don't be shy. This is on every week. I think it's a really great experience. I know that I'm just co-hosting. I'm not a member of Ministry of Testing as a staff, but I'm part of the community and I love it. And I love all the conversations that we have in the club area that comes out of these conversations from people listening and raising their hands and raising really good points. So just spread the word, get more of your colleagues in, product owners. It doesn't have to just be testers. I love hearing everyone's perspective on testing and seeing how we can just become stronger together. It's really great.
Wonderful. Okay, folks, well, thank you so much for today. We will see you next week. We'll speak with you next week. Thank you for joining. Enjoy the rest of your day, wherever you may be on this wonderful planet, and have a lovely weekend. Bye for now.